Today, Jared Fogle has been charged and has admitted to participating in a five-year criminal scheme to exploit children.
That's U.S. Attorney Josh Minkler announcing the plea deal for former Subway spokesman Jared Fogle this week. Fogle has agreed to serve prison time and pay 14 victims restitution. The Fogle case has brought the issue of child sexual exploitation back into the news, and we're going to talk about it now. So a warning, this conversation may not be appropriate for all listeners. Joining us is David Finkelhor. He directs the Crimes Against Children Research Center at the University of New Hampshire. David, welcome.
It's good to be here.
Well, and of course, we're talking about this because of the Fogle case, because he is so well known. But how common are arrests for sexual exploitation of minors in this country?
Well, he's being charged with two crimes, child pornography and child prostitution utilization. They're somewhat different. The child pornography is a very serious international problem that's been fueled by digital technology in recent years. The good news is that that same technology has given law enforcement some tools to fight it that they never had before. But the number of arrests have been increasing dramatically. They've doubled over the last 10 years to about 6,000. And that's a product of both the increased availability of child pornography and the law enforcement innovations in investigating and prosecuting it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, which is how easy is it for people who are looking for that to go out and find it online?
It's surprisingly easy. Child pornography comes in many forms, images and videos, from infants being raped to self-portraits of naked 17-year-olds. There's probably more of the teenage stuff. But most of the prosecutions involve the possession of images involving prepubescent children. And the offenders are mostly men, include pedophiles interested in prepubescent children, but also men with more typical sexual interests who want to fantasize about teenagers. Some look at it just out of curiosity. Some get it by downloading batches of porn from various internet sources. It's all highly illegal and really should be treated as radioactive and off bounds by anybody except authorized law enforcement.
And who is behind it? Who's making it? Are these organized criminal rings or are these individuals who are doing this?
It's both. They're organized rings, but there is also a considerable amount that's posted by individual sexual abusers who film or take pictures of what they do. Some of it comes from young people themselves who either post it and it inadvertently gets into the stream or who are selling the stuff to make money. One of the things that gets us into the news is that many of the offenders here, like Fogle, are respectable people without prior criminal records. It seems that sexual deviance and compulsivity seem to work on a different track from other kinds of criminal impulses. So you get doctors and university professors and entertainers and business people and lawyers caught up in this.
How likely is it that they are caught, though? In this case, we've heard that the Florida reporter Rochelle Herman, she's been on CNN saying that in 2007, she heard Jared Fogle making an inappropriate comment and she alerted the FBI, who asked her to tape conversations with Fogle. And she says he talked about sex with underage children. Is it whistleblowers that call this to attention, or is the government actively looking for these people?
Oh, law enforcement has an extensive network of people at work on this. There are these Internet Crimes Against Children task forces set up all around the country. They have some remarkable tools, including the ability to monitor the transactions in child pornography or child abuse images across the net and to see its presence in people's hard drives who are trading it on peer-to-peer networks. They have tens or hundreds of thousands of computers in their view. They only end up prosecuting, investigating a small percentage of the people who actually have the stuff. But I think people who get this stuff oftentimes don't realize how much law enforcement activity there is out there, and they think that in the secrecy of their homes they're safe. They're not. And the penalties for possession are quite harsh.
Is it at all possible to get this stuff off of the web or not? Is child porn always going to be out there? There's no way for authorities to stay ahead of people who are going to create it and put it out there.
Well, one of the big problems here is that it's so international, and a lot of the material and the sites that harbor it are offshore. So international cooperation is a key element to reducing the amount of child pornography that's available. It's improving, but there's still a lot of jurisdictions that really do not participate in the international collaboration on this. The other problem is stopping the money transfers, getting the credit card operators and the banks to not allow these sites overseas to accept or get funds from international sources using credit cards.
We're speaking with David Finkelhor, who directs the Crimes Against Children Research Center at the University of New Hampshire. We're talking about the world of child pornography after the news about Jared Fogel, the now former spokesman for Subway, who has agreed to pay $1.4 million to victims in his child sexual exploitation case. And David, let me ask you, how common is it for people who are looking at child porn to go and act on it, as Jared Fogel appears to have done, to go and find underage children and have sex with them?
Well, not everyone, but a large proportion, maybe it's a quarter to half, who get investigated and arrested, also have committed hands-on offenses. And he is being charged with engaging the services of juvenile prostitutes, I believe, particularly in New York. This is a connected problem, but it is a little bit different. Here we have teenagers, both boys and girls. Girls are more likely to work with pimps or other girls, sometimes in small operations and sometimes in large, slick commercial operations. But some of these teens work on their own independently. They are advertised on Craigslist and other internet sites. But some operate on the street and in areas with other prostitutes. There is also a market for younger children who are mostly trafficked by their family members. These kids, some of them, the stereotype is that they're runaways and homeless kids. That's true about some, but many are not. They have a variety of problems. They tend to have been sexually abused in their family of origin or elsewhere. Some, particularly the boys, have been rejected by their families because of sexual orientation issues. They can have histories of drug abuse, school failure. Many come out of foster homes, have mental health problems. And it's a challenging population to work with.
The lawyer for Jared Fogel, Jeremy Margolis, told reporters that Fogel has a medical problem and that he expects to get well. Is that possible in a situation like this?
Well, if he means that we can get him to a place where he's not going to commit these kinds of offenses again, the evidence suggests that's true. Once people have been convicted of sex offenses involving children or child pornography, the recidivism rate, you know, runs about 20% or so. So there are a considerable number who seem to be able to resist. There are some individuals, and I don't know whether Fogel is one of them, who've done this so often and so extensively that they're much harder to treat and reform. But there are good programs that have success in reducing the likelihood of reoffending.
I want to ask you about one more thing. We just had a conversation recently about a young man, a 19-year-old in the Midwest, who had sex with a 14-year-old girl who he thought was 17. That's what she had told him. And he's now trying to not have to register as a sex offender for the next 25 years. And even the girl and her mother have said they want leniency from the judge who sentenced him in the case. What do you think about that? Because we got a lot of comments to our website after that story of people who were very sympathetic to this 19-year-old, even though he had had sex with a 14-year-old.
Well, these cases are very hard to parse. There certainly are people who get caught up in the efforts to eradicate sexual predation on children in situations that probably were mistaken identities. It does happen, but unfortunately that's often used as an excuse as well, so it's something that the criminal justice system has to sort out. I do think that this is an area, though, where we really need to reinforce the norms. There are a lot of people out there who think that viewing child pornography or having sex with somewhat younger people but who still may be teenagers is okay. It's not really sexual abuse. We need to have people be much more careful about it and recognize that we have these laws for good reason, and when they're dealing with images on the internet or when they're dealing with children who might be minors, there are very bright lines here that need to be observed.
That's David Finkelhor, who directs the Crimes Against Children Research Center at the University of New Hampshire. He's the author of Childhood Victimization, Violence, Crime, and Abuse in the Lives of Young People. David, thank you for joining us.
I'm very pleased to have been able to help.